It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
If individuals enrolled last year, it is going to be a passive renewal. So if they do not change anything within their account, if they do not indicate that they want to terminate their coverage, they will be re-enrolled in the same policy, and they will be notified if their premiums are changing.
Health insurance navigator Amelia Goldsmith explains what you need to know about obtaining and keeping private health insurance under Obamacare during the open enrollment period from November 15 through February 15. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the Social Security Administration is penalizing SSI recipients in same-sex couples in marriage recognition states. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 252, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The Social Security Administration has begun the process of trying to make recipients of Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, in same-sex marriages pay back thousands of dollars in overpayments. Overpayments which were caused by SSA's refusal to recognize same-sex marriages of SSI recipients until a year after the U.S. Supreme Court decision in U.S. v. Windsor. Now they are being recognized retroactively to the date of the Windsor decision, which results in significant overpayments in almost all cases. SSA will not recognize anyone as a spouse for SSI purposes unless the couple had a valid marriage and resides in a marriage recognition state. This is good news for many individuals in same-sex relationships who need SSI benefits but would be ineligible if their partner's incomes were deemed to them. The bad news, however, is SSI's apparent decision to seek recovery of SSI overpayments from individuals in same-sex marriages in marriage recognition state, whose eligibility or amount of benefits might have been affected if their spouse's incomes and/or resources had been deemed or if they had applied as married couples. These overpayments could be retroactive to the date of the Windsor decision, June 26, 2013, and could be as much as $10,000 or more. The National Senior Citizens Law Center and the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders believe this inequitable policy is wrong and they are seeking to challenge it. While the determinations of the overpayments are generally correct, they believe that recovery of the overpayments should be waived and that SSA should not even be attempting to recover them. The Social Security Act provides for waiver of the overpayment if the SSI recipient was without fault in connection with the overpayment, and recovery would either defeat the purpose of the act or would be against equity and good conscience. They believe that recovery should be waived in all of these cases. While waiver is normally determined on a case-by-case basis, an across-the-board waiver determination is appropriate here since the facts are the same in all cases. The only reason for the overpayment in each of these cases is SSA's delay in making a final determination as to its policy with respect to same-sex marriage and SSI eligibility. The collection of the overpayments in each of these cases would be against equity and good conscience, regardless of whether or not one views SSA's delay in determination of its policy as justified or not. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. We are speaking with Amelia Goldsmith. She is one of the certified navigators for the health insurance marketplace, and we are going to be talking about the open enrollment process for the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, which opens in just a few days. Welcome back to the show, Amelia.
Thank you, Marty.
So for our listeners who came in late, would you give us just a brief overview of the health insurance marketplace and the Affordable Care Act and what it does for people?
So the health insurance marketplace is a call center as well as a website that allows you to go ahead and apply for subsidies that help pay for insurance policies, and it also allows you to enroll in insurance plans that meet minimum value standards. Now, these plans are called qualified health plans, and they are required to have a minimum of 10 essential health benefits, which include things from ambulatory care services to hospitalization to maternity coverage to mental health services. And so one of the advantages of shopping through the marketplace is that individuals know that they are getting services that are fairly comprehensive and that also meet minimum standards. So they're federally regulated.
What do those people have to do now to keep the insurance that they got last year?
So if individuals who enrolled in a policy during last open enrollment period, which it's important to note was much longer than this open enrollment period, last open enrollment period started in October and went through March. This open enrollment period is going from November 15th to February 15th, so it is a much shorter period. If individuals enrolled last year, it is going to be a passive renewal. So if they do not change anything within their account, if they do not indicate that they want to terminate their coverage, they will be re-enrolled in the same policy and they will be notified if their premiums are changing. Now, that said, if somebody wants to potentially change policies, they need to go to their marketplace account, update their application, and select a new policy. Additionally, if they were not eligible last year, this is a period of time in which they can actually come to the marketplace and enroll in coverage for the first time.
So if somebody currently enrolled does absolutely nothing, I gather they're going to keep the same plan and hopefully it will be the same providers. Could there be a situation where the plan they had last year is no longer available or the provider network they had last year is also no longer available?
I am fairly certain that there will be several new policies offered, and I have not been notified the policies that were offered last year will not be available. So I would be very surprised to find out if some of these policies that were available last year were canceled. The whole point of their creation was to be on the exchange and to meet these minimum standards. So these insurance companies really did design these policies to participate in the exchange. So it would appear very unusual if they weren't on the exchange in the second year. Now, the thing that may occur is that premiums could go up a little bit. From everything that I've read, and like I said, we actually haven't gotten the chance to see the policies yet, but from everything that I've read about Virginia's insurance market, premiums aren't expected to increase more than 10%. So if there is an increase, it should be quite shallow. So it fortunately wouldn't be an enormous spike in costs, but individuals who enrolled in a plan last year, if the premium cost is actually changing, they will be notified. If they don't want to enroll in the policy in light of these changes, you know, they can go ahead and they can look at the new plans that are offered, and it's very feasible that one could be less expensive than the policy that they're in last year. But, you know, it's important to go through the entire process again, where you check if certain hospitals are in network, if your primary care physician is in network, you know, whether or not the medications that you take will be covered. So you would really need to start over if you're interested in a new policy. But, you know, anyone that wasn't happy with the policy that they had last year does have the opportunity to go ahead and find a new one. Additionally, if even if individuals want to stay in the same policy, it's absolutely worth going into your account and just updating your information and make sure that it's up to date and reflects how what you anticipate the taxable year of 2015 to look like for your household.
Now, the tax subsidies, of course, that depends to a large extent on household income, which, of course, could vary from year to year. So if a current enrolled person does absolutely nothing, I assume the tax subsidies will stay the same. But if there's been a change in income, they really need to go through the whole re-enrollment process again?
Yes, and this can actually become a fairly complicated answer. So if an individual anticipates their income to be the same, so when you do an application, you are anticipating your income. So let's say an individual is enrolling and they anticipate that they will be making $20,000 over the course of 2015, and it is currently November 2014. So that's what they're anticipating. That was the same method used to anticipate household income when people were applying in 2013. They were thinking about the taxable year of 2014. So if they actually ended up making more than that, let's say they actually made $24,000 in 2015, they need to go back and update their information. Let's say they were making less than that. Let's say they made $15,000 instead of $20,000. That's something they would also need to update. The IRS has anticipated that not everyone will update their information, and so there will be a reconciliation when people file for taxes. So let's say in the taxable year of 2014, somebody included on their 2014 marketplace application that they were making $20,000 and they made $15,000 at the end of the year. They would get additional tax credits when they actually file for taxes, and so that reconciliation would occur at that time. Now, if they actually ended up making $24,000 a year, then they would actually have to pay back some of the tax credits. So this same system is going to be used in the anticipation of the 2015 policy year. So if an individual in November is anticipating their income to go up, they should indicate that, and their income is going to go down, they should indicate that. But if, the same system is going to be used, so even if there were some differences in what they expected, there will be a reconciliation process when they actually do file for taxes in 2016.
So if someone needs to get back into the system, presumably they can use the login and password that they created when they first signed up earlier this year or possibly even late in 2013. What if you've forgotten either your login or your password? What do you do in that situation? Is there a way to retrieve it, or do you have to just start a brand new account altogether?
So if you forgot your password, and this is actually going to be relevant for a lot of people because they reset all of the passwords after the Heartbleed virus, and so if someone hasn't accessed their account since, they're actually going to have to do this, and so they can call the marketplace to receive a temporary password sent to their email address, and then they can access their account with the temporary password and select a new password. So if you had an account last year and you need to change any information within your application, it's very possible you may need to do this. So I would recommend going ahead and trying to sign into your account. If you are having issues, then call the marketplace, and that number is 1-800-318-2596. And that is readily available at the healthcare.gov website. It's displayed in several places. They can send you a temporary password, and you should be able to go ahead and create a new password from there.
So I think that pretty much wraps up the people who are currently enrolled in the health insurance marketplace. What about people who did not enroll last year? I mean, first of all, they're going to face some sort of a tax penalty when they file their 2014 taxes in 2015. Can you explain to us what that is and how that's just going to get heavier and heavier?
Yes, absolutely. So in the first year, if you were uninsured for longer than 3 months and you did not file for an exemption from the tax penalty, then you will indeed need to pay it. So that is $99 for a single adult or 1% of your annual income, whichever is largest. So if 1% of your annual income is $300, then that is what your penalty would be. Now, in the second year, it is going to go up. I believe that it's $200 and something, but it will go up to 2% of your income. And then the third year, it will go up to $600 and something and 2.5% of your annual income. So it will, you know, get much steeper as time goes on. While it is clear in the law that anybody that is an American citizen is required to comply by these rules and have health insurance or be vulnerable to the penalty, there are many people that aren't going to have to pay it. For instance, there are a lot of different ways to get exemptions. So some people automatically have exemptions, like individuals that live below the poverty line and below tax filing threshold are automatically exempt. So an individual who makes a single adult that makes $10,000 a year or below $10,000 a year, that is below tax filing threshold. So they're automatically exempt. Additionally, Native Americans from federally recognized tribes are exempt. But there are a lot of different situations in which you actually need to file for an exemption. So there's a wide variety of things that can allow you to get an exemption. Now, affordability is a reason to get an exemption. If you can prove that the marketplace policy was unaffordable for you, then you can go ahead and get an exemption. Additionally, if you, for any religious reason, do not want to have insurance, and you do need to provide some documentation that you're part of a religious group that does not participate in our traditional medical system, you can get an exemption. Additionally, if you experienced any hardship throughout the year, for instance, if there was a tornado that, you know, damaged your property, or if your water bill was cut off because you couldn't pay it, or if you experienced any other kind of hardship, you can apply for an exemption. And that term has been, it is fairly broad, you know, any other kind of hardship. But if you can argue that it affected your ability to actually get enrolled or afford insurance, then you may be granted an exemption. And if you are interested in applying for an exemption, you can call your local healthcare navigators and they can talk to you a little bit more about the process. But, you know, there are many different ways to get exemptions. And, you know, if you just forgot to enroll, however, that isn't actually one of the ways that you can get an exemption. So there are some individuals that, you know, in spite of there being, you know, large groups of people that are eligible for exemptions, that, you know, they will still need to actually go ahead and pay it.
So let's assume someone didn't enroll last year. They don't qualify for an exemption. They're going to have to pay the tax penalty, but they want to enroll this year. As you just mentioned, the open enrollment period is only half as long this year as it was last year. So what should that person do? What are the steps to follow? What information do they need? Walk us through that, if you will.
So in order to apply, your application needs to reflect your 2015 federal income taxes. So that means that if you file for taxes jointly with your spouse and you have two children, you're going to actually need to include the information for all four people on your application, even if only two of them, for instance, are applying for coverage. And you'd be able to indicate that only two are applying for coverage, but your application needs to reflect what your federal income taxes are going to look like at the end of the year. So names, dates of birth, sources of income. Additionally, Social Security numbers are not as important to include in an application if someone isn't applying for coverage. So let's say only two members out of a household of four are applying. It's best if they have their Social Security numbers available, but they don't need to include the Social Security numbers for the other two individuals who aren't applying. So that information is the most important information. Additionally, it's very important to know if an individual has employer coverage offered to them that they aren't enrolled in, and how much that employer coverage would cost each month.
And last year, the plans were tiered. So there were gold level plans, silver level plans, bronze level plans, and even a catastrophic insurance plan that was available only to younger folks. Can you briefly walk us through that and let us know the advantages, disadvantages of those various tiers for people who haven't signed up but now want to, or maybe they want to change their plan altogether from one tier to another?
So there are actually five categories. So there's catastrophic, there's bronze, there's silver, gold, and platinum. Catastrophic, as you mentioned, it's the least expensive and only available to individuals under 30. but it has extremely high deductibles, and it's really just there in case of an emergency like a car accident. So you don't walk out of the emergency room with no coverage at all. But those deductibles are quite high. The bronze plans cover 60% of your costs after you reach your deductible. The silver plans cover 70%. The gold plans cover 80%. And the platinum plans cover 90%. Now, last year, we didn't have any platinum plans in the Virginia area, but I anticipate that there could potentially be some offered this year. So I'm looking forward to seeing if that is the case. One of the advantages of enrolling in the silver plan, if you're below certain income guidelines, you can get something called cost-sharing benefits, which reduces your deductibles and your co-payments, and it has a lower max on out-of-pocket expenses, which is something that's nice that the Affordable Care Act plans have, which limit how the amount of out-of-pocket expenses you actually pay over the course of the policy year. And those are all reduced for low-income individuals. And so if somebody makes below 200% of the federal poverty line, that's generally when these policies are most supportive. For instance, let's say somebody makes just above the poverty line. Let's say they make, an individual makes, $12,000 a year. If they complete their application, it'll show that, it depends on their age. But oftentimes, if somebody makes that amount annually, they will be eligible for a silver policy with a $0 deductible and a $0 premium and reduced co-payments. So, those are generally that a socioeconomic bracket that gets an enormous amount of support through the Affordable Care Act. And so, low-income individuals especially are usually attracted to these silver plans. Now, if an individual isn't eligible for tax credits or cost sharing, but they have a lot of medical needs, it's often best for them to enroll in something that is a gold or a platinum plan. And as I said, we don't have any platinum plans in this area. And so most people that I've met with that don't qualify for tax credits but have a lot of medical needs usually enroll in a gold policy.
And what happens if you miss the boat? What happens if you don't enroll in a plan by the deadline, which is February 15th of 2015? I know last year there were certain circumstances that would allow you to enroll even after open enrollment had ended. Is that going to be the same for 2015?
So yes, after the open enrollment period ends, you may still be eligible to enroll if you qualify for a special enrollment period. Now, there's different ways to qualify for a special enrollment period. If you move to an area with a different postal code, if you have a child, if you get married, if you get divorced, if you are released from incarceration, if you receive eligible immigration status, if you lose coverage. So just to make a distinction on that, losing coverage does not mean canceling your current policy. You need to actually lose coverage because you lost your job or you left your job. But if you just stopped paying your premiums, that unfortunately wouldn't qualify you for a special enrollment period. So these special enrollment statuses are sparked by a precipitating event, which I just listed some of the ways that can happen. And they last for 60 days. And so individuals can go to the marketplace and enroll during that time. But they would also need to comply by the same eligibility guidelines that that govern this open enrollment period and application process. So the eligibility guidelines remain the same in the special enrollment period windows that are sparked by some of these events.
So final question, where can people learn more about the Virginia Health Insurance Marketplace and just get more information, become more familiar with what they need to do, whether they are currently enrolled and want to renew or they are not currently enrolled and want to purchase health insurance?
Well, because Virginia uses healthcare.gov, going to healthcare.gov is helpful to sort of familiarize yourself with the layout of the website. There's some information that sort of introduces some of these basic functions of the website. Additionally, the navigators are a wonderful resource because we're sort of the personalized assistance. People can ask more complex questions about their situations that they wouldn't be able to get assistance with if they applied alone. So I would just recommend contacting your navigators if you have specific questions. And we have a handful of wonderful navigators working in Richmond, and they're also CACs, who are certified application counselors that we work with very closely, and they're also a wonderful source of information and assistance.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Amelia Goldsmith. She is a certified navigator here at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Do you want to give your number if people want to contact you directly?
Yes, absolutely. You are more than welcome to contact my office at 804-200-6035 if you have any questions or if you'd like to enroll. Again, that is 804-200-6035.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, Marty.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. How do you know if you have a good case to obtain Social Security or SSI disability benefits? Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when disability attorney Charles Crumbine reveals what succeeds and what does not in a claim for disability benefits in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on October 9, 2013. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbert.